All right, we're back. It's all go. Had some audio issues and got lazy and didn't sort it out. So this is an episode I recorded with Ben Carson at the end of last year, and have finally got around to getting it up and go for you. The conversation does cut off short because of said audio issues, which I just haven't been able to fix. But all is good. So this is a yarn with a guy named Ben Carson, or Life vs. Ben on Instagram, if you want to check him out while you're listening. We talk a little bit about getting hit by a car, getting sepsis in Cambodia, camping in Australia, or living out of a tent in Australia, getting kicked out of his house in Queenstown and having to live in a tent because he couldn't afford to pay rent, how he got into hunting, how he got into crossbow hunting. We give him a little bit of shit about crossbow hunting. And then we talk a little bit about mental health and the struggles with that. And then unfortunately, before we really dive right into that, the conversation stops. So if you want to hear more, let us know and we'll jack up another yarn at some point. But as always, enjoy, and yeah, see you out there.
That's a mean idea, so I stole it. So the question for you is, what keeps you in flow?
Oh, routine. just routine keeps me in flow, it keeps me going. If I don't have routine, I lose my mind. I don't know what I'm doing.
I think so you've just got like a...
the routine of getting up at the same time every day and having breakfast at the same time every day, you know?
Yeah. So what is your morning routine? What does your morning look like then if that's your big thing?
Well, I'm quite lucky. So with my job, I basically work when I want, which is quite hard. To then keep your routine, right? Because you wake up and you're like, oh, yeah. I'm still a bit knackered, and you're like, well, I could do another hour in bed. Doesn't matter. But yeah, because of that flexibility, I did lose my routine for quite a while. So I swapped roles in the company. Started doing field work, trapping, and building traps. And I'm just left to my own devices. So I did lose that routine. But yeah, I get up and I don't set an alarm. I wake up probably 6:37 every day, get up, have my brekkie, and then go to work. And I pretty much just work probably 9 to 5, from 9 to 4. And then I base my days off on my routine. Sort of, I don't have a Monday to Friday routine. I base my days off on weather, basically, because my days off I go hunting.
If it's
raining Saturday, Sunday, which it seems to be doing a lot in Queenstown, it's like it knows it's the weekend. If it's raining Saturday, Sunday, I'll be like, well, I'll take Monday, Tuesday off and I'll work Saturday, Sunday. So I'm working today, just later on, probably do 6 hours in the workshop. And then just because I'm taking tomorrow off. So I don't have Monday, Friday routine. But I do need that routine of getting up early and not lazing around.
Yeah, and there's something about that too. Like, I was up at 7 this morning, you know, and it's a Sunday, and it's like you could just go to sleep, have a good sleep in. But when you get up and you go and you do something, there's actually like you stick to it, so that on the days where you have to do it, it's like it's not out of the ordinary. You're just like, yep, so he has, and you just roll with it. Yeah,
yeah. So even at weekends,
like, sort of that.
You know, Sunday lanes are a thing, aren't they? People are like, oh yeah, I'll have a lane on a Sunday. And I'm like, yeah, but then it's got to be harder to get up Monday.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you've got to,
I reckon.
Like, you just got to keep doing it every day. There's a discipline involved, isn't there?
Especially if it's raining
and shit outside, you don't want to get up.
it's that first little win of the day. And there's like, yeah, I mean, there's like 1,000 things on the internet where people talk about like there's a big one about like make your bed every morning.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah.
I don't make my bed. Like, I make it look, you know, I throw the blanket over it and keep it so it doesn't look like shit.
Yeah, but you don't put 12 cushions on making it like a woman.
Yeah.
12 cushions and a little blanket thing over the end, and then...
Don't even get me
started. Chuck it all on the floor. Chuck it all on the floor before you get into bed, and then just do the same next day.
Yeah.
I do the same. I just throw my duvet over, and I'm like, throw a duvet on. But it looks square.
By getting up early and making your bed or whatever the fuck it is that you do, it like gives you that first little win of the day.
Yeah, and you don't even know it.
Like, oh, look at me go. Yeah, and it just feels good.
Yeah.
There's a real good speech, actually. The guy, Admiral William McRaven, and he was like a Navy SEAL Admiral guy, and then he was like the, I don't know what they call it over there, but he was like some big dog at a university after he'd like retired from the Navy, and he did this big speech. And essentially the speech was like it was like a big speech at graduation or something, and he talked about if you make your bed in the morning, that's what you do first. No matter what you do, even if you have the shittest day of your life, you'll get home that night and you'll go, oh fuck, I've got a nice made bed to get into. And like, I kind of agree. I don't go through the effort of making the fucking bed, but like, it is nice when your bed's not in a mess, you know. It's that little win at the start of the day. So you've had at least one win, even if you had a real shit day.
Yeah. And if you come home from work and you look at your bed and it's a mess, it's not the same, is it? But if you come home to an untidy house or an untidy room, it's kind of like you're just finishing the day off messy and you're starting it messy.
Yeah, exactly. What boots do you run, bro?
Lowers. Don't get me started. lower
Tibets. I want to get you started.
Lower Tibets. First pair of hunting boots was Hunter's Element boot. It was like $220, and they were right, but they I was just sweating in them. They're waterproof, but it was like wearing plastic bags on your feet. And they've actually lasted longer than the lowers, so they're a year and a half old, and they've the rounds still on and stuff. The lining inside is a bit shit, but yeah. And then I bought a pair of Zamberlands. They were like $690 or something. Bought them, hunting and fishing. I'm a size 10. They gave me a size 10 and a half. I went up the mountain and was like, God, these are uncomfortable. Went back in. I was like, you've given me the wrong size. And they were like, well, that's your fault, really. And I was like, well, it's not. Okay. And then they said, I'll just stick in my Facebook marketplace and try and get as much money back as you can. And then we'll give you a discount off another pair. And I just refused, And then, so I kept them, and then the round peeled on them after 2 weeks. And I was like, well, $700 boot, and the round's peeling.
Yeah,
Hunting and fishing manager, I won't say his name, he was like, oh, he looks at my sole and goes, oh, you got sheep shit on the bottom of your sole. I was like, yeah. And I was like, I walked across a farm to get access to a block. But he goes, yeah, no, so sheep shit destroys, the nitrates destroy the glue.
Oh,
it was literally just on the sole, right? It wasn't on the round. It was like,
yeah.
It wasn't yeah, like yeah, I yeah. trudged ankle deep in sheep shit. And I was just like, oh, really? I was like, well, for $700 boot, they should probably put that on a box or something, shouldn't they? Like, don't wear them on sheep shit. But,
and then, but even... And then, yeah, fuck.
Like, you should be able to walk in anything.
Yeah,
like bar hot coals.
Yeah, exactly. And even like, I know like shit does, like sheep shit's not super bad. Like cow shit is fucking horrendous for like ruining boots. But if you, if you're like only a couple of weeks into wearing a pair of boots and it's falling apart, that ain't sheep shit. That's just a manufacturing fault.
And then because I'd already complained about sizing a shoe, he was almost trying to say you've peeled the round off yourself to get a refund.
So
I was like, well, he goes, oh, we'll send them back for a pair. So they sent them back to Hunting and Fishing HQ up north somewhere, And then they just told him to give me a new pair of boots. So then I got Lower Tibet.
Yeah.
And they're good. Like, they weren't, they're for wide feet, and I've probably got quite skinny feet. So I put an extra pair of insoles in them, and they're great. They're heavy ass. They're like 1.2 kilos each, which is a lot.
Mm.
It's a lot to be carrying on your feet, an extra 2.4 kilos. And but they just, the round started peeling, I don't know, 2 months in. I was just like, oh, Jesus. Wear and tear, but it's just a bit, just a bit annoying. It was $780 for a pair of boots.
Yeah, boots are not. Fuck, that's so.
When I was in the army, I had lovers when I was in the army, and they lasted me ages. They lasted me years. I even crashed my motorbike, and they still carried on.
What are those? The Zephyrs or the Z8, depending on how you buy them.
What the
the lowest. Z6 or Z8 or whatever they call them, those the
ones. Oh
yeah.
Now these were black leather boots that they made.
Oh,
specifically for NATO. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, they didn't have a round and stuff on, but they were just like a generic hiking boot, because obviously there wasn't many mountains where I live, so.
Yeah,
hiking through woodland.
So was that back in the UK?
Yeah,
2010. Obviously, for those listening, they'll notice that you don't sound like you're from around here.
No.
Where did you grow up?
My family and friends think I've got a twang. I grew up in Hastings, not Hastings, New Zealand. Hastings, England. Similar place though. Put it politely. Similar.
All right.
If I say to a Kiwi, oh yeah, I'm from Hastings, they're like, ooh. And I'm like, no, Hastings, England. They're like, oh, I'm like, no, same reaction now. Same.
yeah. Oh, shit. And what brought you to New Zealand?
What was it, 2017. I'd actually never been on a plane. I'd never left England. I'd been to Scotland and Wales, but I'd never left England. I hadn't even been to Europe, because I just,
Jesus.
I don't know. I didn't, my family, was like quite a poor family, so we didn't take holidays and stuff. We didn't have money. So I never had the urge. As I got older, I still was just like, I don't need anything. And I spent all my money on motorbikes and beer. It's just my life.
Yeah.
So I didn't. And then I was in the ambulance service. I left the ambulance service. The day I left the ambulance service, I got hit by a car on my motorbike. And I was just like,
oh, fuck.
I was like, I actually got fired from the ambulance service, but I won't go into that. But I was just like, oh, this is shit. And my ex left me the week before that, and I worked with her in the ambulance service. So I still had to see her for like 12 hours a day. And then I got fired, and she was like, oh, who you got fired? She said goodbye. She goes, well, at least it can't get any worse. And then I pulled out of the ambulance headquarters and got hit by a car on the roundabout. And I was just like,
that's
laying
not a
there.
Great day at work, is it?
No, I was laying there with like my crash helmet wedged under her car, under his car door.
Yeah.
And I was like, with a bike on top of me. And I was just still, I need to leave England. Because I've had enough. So I just sold everything I owned. I sold everything, and I got on, went online and was like looking at working holidays in Australia, and I was like, oh, yeah, I'll do that. So I applied for the visa, but it took extra long because I had military history. So then you have to get references, and you have to write a list of, like, stupidly, you have to write a list of every weapon you ever fired.
Well, it'd be a long list, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and they wanted dates, and I'm like, I don't know. Let's make it up.
So I
have my flights booked, and I was like, well, my visa still hasn't come through, so I flew to Bali. And my first ever flight was London to Dubai, and then Dubai to Bali. Got to Bali, just waited there for my visa to come through. And whilst I was waiting, the volcano went off, and they started grounding flights, and I was like, this is not going well. Then I got to Oz, spent 2.5 years, 2 years and 3 months in Oz, and I'd go to Asia sort of every now and then, travel around Asia.
And what were you doing in Aussie?
Heaps of stuff, just like mainly working on trading sites, labouring, yeah, all over. So I was in Perth, spent a lot of time in Geelong, south of Melbourne, and then I spent 8 months in Agnes Water, Queensland, and I was working as a like assistant manager of a holiday park, which was pretty cool. Had a beach buggy and stuff.
So that was right up. That's
near Bundaberg.
Agnes is like way north, eh? Still south of south of Cairns, but north of Townsville.
South of Townsville, it's central Queensland, so it's like six hours north of Brizzy.
That
was a cool small town. So I was my visa ended when 2019 for us, my second year visa ended, and I flew to Asia, and then I got sepsis in Cambodia and ended up in intensive care in Cambodia. And I was like, I don't want to die in Cambodia. I was in there for a week.
not a place to die. What did you like? How did you get the sips? Like, go into
no idea.
That,
like... No idea. I had like heat rash on my ankles because I'm so English that I get blisters if I sweat too much. Honestly, if I go to Bali, I love Bali, right? Every time I go to Bali, I have to go off into the mountains on a motorbike, because if I stay down in the towns where it's hot, my skin, I just get like in my elbow creases behind my knees, I get horrendous heat rash. I can't sweat enough, so my pores clog up, and then I get all these blisters, and I just look like a leper, eh? Everyone just looks at you like you're diseased. So, and I was in Cambodia, and I got caught in this sort of flash flood in this city, and this city looks like it was half falling down, it looked like Syria. And I was walking along, and then all this muddy water and sewage just was like rising on the road, and there was nowhere to walk, so I'm just walking in it in the middle of the road, and then some random guys picked me up in a rickshaw and were like, do you want a lift? And then 2 or 3 days later, I was a bit crook before that, but 2 or 3 days later, I'm back in Phnom Penh, luckily in the capital. I wake up and I'm like, I'm hungover, and I'm like, God, I feel rough, and yeah, just vomiting and diarrhea. And I was like, I never vomit on a hangover, so I was like, something off here. Had a thermometer with first aid kit, took the temperature, and I was like, 38, kept going up, and once it hit over 40, I was like, I better go to hospital. By the time I got to hospital, I was almost unconscious. Had a resting heart rate of 143, which was nice.
Holy fuck.
Usually around 50. to 60. Yeah. When I'm fit, it's about 50. But yeah, 143, and they just kept telling me to calm down. I was like, I'm calm, like, I'm not controlling this. Yeah, and then they did some blood tests. And
telling somebody to calm down is not like...
No, it doesn't work.
Telling somebody to calm down never works. At no point.
Well, I was calm. I was laying there just thinking, I've got bad food poisoning or something. So I was calm. But then the machine kept flashing like tachycardic because my heart rate was so high. So they were just coming in like, calm down. I was like, I'm calm. I was like, but you saying calm down. Now you look scared, so now I'm less calm. You're freaking out. I'm like, why are you freaking out? So I was just like, no, I'm calm.
And this is in Cambodia. Was there like language barrier issues, or were could they speak pretty good English?
No. It was a struggle. I didn't for example, no one told me I had sepsis until the insurance guy turns up. And I filled out my travel insurance stuff, and he gives me this form, and I get to the bottom of the form, and I'm like, why is it $7,500? I've been here for like 2 hours. And then he goes, you have sepsis. I was like, sorry? He's like, you have sepsis. Like, I was in the ambulance service, right? So you see people die from sepsis all the time. So I was just like, and who's your old? I was just like, what do you mean I have sepsis? And he goes, doctor hasn't told you. I was like, nah, mate. And he was like, I'll get the doctor. Doctor comes in. She's like, yeah, you have sepsis. I was like, great. He's like, yeah, so it costs so much because you're going to intensive care for the rest of the week. And I was like, okay, cool. And then that was it, straight to intensive care. But yeah, massive language barrier. I asked for, I was trying to eat. I didn't eat for the first few days. And then this nurse came in, and I said, they were talking, the nurse and the doctor were talking, taking all these tests. And when they're talking in their own language, you just don't know what they're saying. They could be saying like, yeah, he's going to die tomorrow. Or they could be saying, oh, he's doing really well. So you just sit there listening to them talking, like, okay. And then, so I like, did a thumbs up, and I just went, yeah. And I said to the doctor, and I put my thumb up, and I said, all good? As in, like, am I all good? And he just went, sorry? I was like, all good? And he went, yes, yes, yes. Walks off. And then the nurse comes back with a yogurt. She comes out with yogurt. And then she puts it on my little table thing. And she goes, yogurt. And puts her thumb up. And I'm like, no, I didn't ask for a bloody yogurt, did I? I said, all good. So I was like, yeah, oh well. Yeah, it was a language barrier. It was an experience.
Fucking and hell, then
my old band was like,
story to have now.
Yeah. Well, everyone's got to have a travel story, eh?
Yeah.
My old band was like, oh, he was still like, oh, I know you're in intensive care and you're super sick and I haven't seen you for 2 or 3 years. He was like, but don't come home. He was like, just go back to Oz. So my Aussie boss was like, oh, if you can get a tourist visa and get back in here, you can come do Kashi and I'll give you free accommodation.
Yeah.
So I was like, sweet. And I didn't want to fly back to England for 24 hours. You know, as soon as I got discharged out of hospital, I went, stayed in a hotel, grabbed my bags from my hostel, stayed in a hotel, straight to the airport, flew to Bangkok, and then flew from Bangkok to Brisbane. And then, yeah, and I was crook as. I slept from Bangkok to Brisbane. I slept the whole way. I hate flying. I just passed. I had like sleep tablets. They gave me Xanax for my anxiety and all my antibiotics. And I took them all. And then I just passed out. And I woke up like drooling all over the table. And with these two Israeli girls poking me. And they're like, are you okay? And I was just like a zombie. I lost like, I don't know, I lost about 8 kilos. I looked at him and I was like, yeah, I'm all good. And then I get off the plane.
Just thinking you're some sort of methy or something. Eh?
Yeah, so I got off the plane, I'm waiting for my bag, and immigration made a beeline for me and just started talking to me. So they're like, where you been? I'm like, Cambodia. They're like, what are you doing in Cambodia? I was like, traveling. Well, actually, I've just spent a week in intensive care. He was like, oh, okay. I was like, yeah, I'm well aware I look like a crackhead. and then he just let me go. He was like, I was in Cambodia a couple of weeks ago. It's beautiful. I was like, yeah, nah, didn't see much of it, mate, but he was all right. Never going back. I haven't been back to Asia since.
Great yogurt.
Yeah, great yogurt. All good. All good yogurt. Yeah, and then I went back to Oz. I was in Oz for 3 months until my visa ended, and then I was going to go home and visit, and then COVID hit, and I was like, still recovering. So I was like, I don't want to get sick again. I don't know what this COVID stuff is. So I just came to Queenstown because two of my schoolmates were living here. So came to Queenstown and then lockdown happened. And I had no money. So I went and lived in the bush with my camping gear that I bought over from Oz.
Yeah. I've written that down to talk to you about that because when we were talking on the phone the other week, you mentioned that. So like, obviously you're living in Queenstown. How long had you been in Queenstown? At this point, like a couple of weeks.
3 weeks. Yeah.
And you had, you were like renting a flat.
I was living in a hostel. And then I was moving into a room, like in a house share. And then lockdown happened. And the first case in New Zealand was some family from Denmark who were on a rafting tour here. And their rafting tour guide was my housemate. And my housemate was like, I come home from a night out the next morning. And then she goes, oh, just by the way, I'm self-isolating. I was like, what? She's like, yeah, that's on a minibus with this girl who's got COVID. And I was like, oh, no. I got like, my health anxiety was real bad after having sepsis. I was so scared of getting sick. So I was just like, oh, fuck, yeah. And then I was like, oh, yeah. So I was working at Placemakers. I'd only just started there in a few days. And then went to work and went home, and then they announced lockdown on my birthday, and I was like, this is great. And then I was just like, am I going to get kicked out of the country? Blah, blah, blah. People are talking about subsidy, and I'm like, well, in England, if you're not English, you're probably not, you know, if you're just a tourist, no, you're not going to get money. So I was like, I'm not going to get subsidy, and I've got $700. So I was like, so I'm going to have to move out of my place and go camp until this is all over,
so
save as much money as I can.
Had you lost your job, or was there just no work because of the lockdown? Like they hadn't.
Yeah, well, I lost my job. Yeah, pretty much because
everything
shut down. Obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had only just started as like temp staff, like with an agency.
Okay. So, straight so away.
Even when they start back up, it's like the business is going to be minimal, isn't it?
Yeah.
They weren't going to open the country 2 weeks later. So I went into the bush and saw my first kiwi possum. Didn't know anything about them at that point. Hate them now. But at the time, I was like,
find it fucking awesome that you just went and like lived in the bush because you didn't. But
I was just like, I don't know. I like camping and stuff. Like when I was traveling around Oz, when I was living in Geelong at first, I was living in a tent and then pretending I wasn't living in a tent. So I'd like put my jeans and my leather shoes on a dress shirt and go for a Tinder date in Geelong. And then she'd be like, yeah, where are you staying? And I'm like, oh, yeah, just down Bowen Heads way. She's like, oh, yeah, that's where I'm living. I'm like, oh, yeah. She's like, what road? I was like, well, I'm actually just in a tent. She's like, what? Yeah, no, I just in a tent.
It's a nice tent.
Yeah, it's a nice tent. It's a Kmart tent, $24 bucks. Single skin. Yeah, good tent. Yeah.
Did you successfully manage to get any dates back to the tent?
Not to the tent, no. But if you tell them you've got a tent, they're hospitable enough to be like, oh, you can't stay in there, it's cold, come back to mine.
Oh, just, look at that.
Yeah, I'm just a well-dressed homeless pommy guy. I'm exotic.
Exotic. Oh, shit.
I've got one of them accents.
Yeah. So you're living in a tent just out of Queenstown somewhere?
Yeah, just a few K up the road. There's a bit, it's like a half native and then half pines, basically, where the two lays meet. And then I had a warehouse fishing rod that I bought, and it was like bright pink, his little kid's fishing rod. And I used that, and every day I'd just go down the lake fishing, and then every evening I'd be chopping wood and a moorpork. This moorpork cow would come over and just sit about 2 foot above me on a branch, just staring at me. And I had no idea, you know. I was like, oh, it's an owl. But in England, we see heaps of owls. But I was just like, oh, it's an owl, that's cool. And now, you know, even now, I'm like, oh, I don't think I've seen a moorpork since. I've seen one. But every night, yeah, this owl would come down. We'd just chill. That was quite cool. I made a little hut thingy, and then, yeah, slept in my tent, had a fireplace made out of schist rock. It was quite nice.
It sounds like the dream.
And then I was there for like 2 weeks, and then I got an email saying like, oh, you got subsidy, $585 a week. And I was like, fucking, this country's great. I've been here 3 weeks and now they're paying me to go camping. Like, this is insane. A lot of people will be grumbling at that comment and be like, fucking come over here.
Yeah, but fuck,
stealing our women and our money.
You just got to take what you can get.
Yeah, and after that, I was like, well, I don't need to be in the bush much longer. So I just went back and, yeah, just went back and moved into the old room.
You're able to rent that room again back at that other house?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's all good then, eh?
Yeah, so I just went back. Yeah. My housemates were all stoned. They didn't even know I was gone. Like, they didn't even fucking know. They just, they had no idea.
Oh, were they just, oh, so
they were just getting stoned and drinking all day. So I walked in and they were just like, yeah, and they were just like, oh, hey. I was like, hey. There's no, like, where you've been, how's your adventure? It's just like, all right. I'm like, all right, cool. And then I got bored again, so I just went back down the bush for a few days because I just got fed up. Sitting indoors,
yeah,
drinking a six pack every day. So,
and had you had you done much like outdoorsy shit back home? Like,
I go camping quite often.
Thing back there, but like,
unless you're posh, unless you know farmers, and it's really hard to get a gun license. Hunting was never a thing for me. I'd see deer when I was fishing, and I'd be like, oh, cool deer, and he'd get excited, eh? And I'd be like, oh, I could never shoot a deer. I don't know how people shoot deer. They're beautiful. They're cool. You said over here it's different, I guess. Completely different. But, yeah, I'd go fishing all the time. I mean, camping with mates when I was younger. Yeah, so it was quite outdoorsy, a bit mountain biking. I definitely was an indoors guy. Like, I play video games in the evening, but I wouldn't sit all day playing video games. I was always out and about. Yeah. I'd say fishing was my main hobby. Not for food. Just for
fun.
Just for sport, yeah. Which I find odd now, because over here I do trout fishing and I eat them, so it's just like, can't believe I used to fish and I eat them.
Do you fly fish or are you spinning?
No, spinning. Or sometimes just bait. I just stick a prawn on and I just sit down and have a few beers.
That's the way to do it.
Works well.
It does, eh? It does. So how do you end up, like, how does hunting become, like, it's obviously, it's quite a large part of your life now. How do you go from being this tourist camping in the bush?
I was in the bush, and then while I was in the bush, I was like, went on YouTube, typed in like NZ bushcraft, and then I found Josh James on YouTube. And I was watching heaps of Josh James' videos, and I was like, oh, yeah. And I've always been into bushcraft. Like, I used to have this little bushcraft book when I was growing up, like SAS Survival Guide and stuff. So I was like, look, watching these Josh James videos, and obviously he's hunting in them. And I was like, I didn't know there's deer in New Zealand. That's wild. Cool. I had no idea there's all these animals here. And then I'd see goats. Whilst I was camping, I'd just see goats, like, walking around near me, just wild goats. And I was like, oh, yeah. Never even thought about eating a goat. And then I met a girl just after lockdown. She was vegan feminist, the complete opposite of me.
Sounds like all mates are like,
oh yeah, all mates are literally like, oh, this won't fucking last long, will it? then I was just eating, you know, cause, and then we ended up traveling around. She bought a bus and I built it, turned into a house bus. So I spent 6 months traveling around New Zealand with her in this bus. And then she'd always obviously want to eat veggie stuff and we're trying to save money. So I barely ate meat whilst I was with her. And then we broke up. I moved back to Queenstown. And then, I think I was just watching Josh James and I was watching hunting videos. And then I was like, this hunting stuff seems quite cool. And I was always, you know, I was catching fish. I was fishing, catching fish and eating them. And when I was like eating something I caught, I was like, that's cool. That's rewarding. And I was on Waiheke Island just before I moved to Queensland. I was on Waiheke Island at my ex's rich uncle's place. We're out kayak fishing every morning and I caught like a massive, a huge snapper. I don't know how big it was, but it was a giant. It was pulling me around for ages. And I ate that and I was like, oh, it's so rewarding just eating something you've not bought from a shop. So I was like, I'll look at compound bows. So I went into hunting fishing. I was like, hey, I want to get into hunting. I looked at a compound bow, like, what price range am I looking at? And he was like, all in, everything, and tuned, you're looking at about $2,000. And I was like, well, I don't like hunting that much. And $2,000 goes quite far in a supermarket. So I'm not spending $2,000 on a bow. I was like, no, not doing it. And then I knew I couldn't get a rifle because I was on a working holiday visa. And then because of PTSD and all that. So I was like, So then I looked up crossbows and I bought a crossbow off Gun City for like $550. Spent days and days and losing bolts and broadheads and not knowing what I was doing. I was just using cheap bolts and they don't fly true and all that. And then got some advice off some guys on Facebook, bought some decent bolts. And then I was like, oh God, like hitting bullseyes now. And then, probably about 2 weeks later, I shot a goat. So two goats, and then about 6 weeks later I had my first and my biggest stag on the deck.
Fucking hell, just like that, eh?
Yeah, so just like, I went up hunting up the block closest to me one day and I looked across the other side of the river up on this face and I was like, and it says Doc said there's goats in the block, but it's such a big block the goats are on the other end of the block. So I was like, I'm like, oh, is that a goat? And I was like, oh, I don't want to walk all the way up the top, across the bridges to get to that goat if it's a sheep. I was like, kind of looks like a sheep.
Yeah.
So I just flew my drone over because I'm lazy. I flew my drone over and I was like, oh, it's a sheep. I'm glad I didn't walk all the way over there for a sheep. It's a wild sheep. But I was just like, I'm not going to have the sheep. As I'm flying my drone back, I'm just about to land it, and about 200 metres above me on top of this cliff where there's like a flat patch of grass, there's three stags. And I'm just like, and they're just running from my drone. And I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And they're like boosting. And I'm, so I climb, they boost up the mountain. So I go around, I put my drone away and I walk up there, and then I spot them, and there's like a 10 pointer, a 6 and an 8. Shitty, yeah. One of them was shitty. One of them had a bad leg and a twisted antler. And I was watching them, and I spent 3 hours stalking in on them. And I got within 50 meters, and then I could see was the top of their backs and their heads, because they were feeding above this like tiny little bump between us. And I was like, So I was just waiting, and then I knocked a rock, and it was like went tumbling down the hill, and then they all boosted, and I was like, shit.
Oh, fuck.
And I tried to chase them. I was all excited. Tried to chase them, went up the ridge to where they went, and I could see them on this opposite face. And whilst I'm standing up there, I hear a noise, and I look around, and there's a chamois about 48 meters away, a chamois buck. And I'm just like, fuck me, what's going on?
Shit.
It's my first proper trip into a hunting block, and I've seen three stags and a fucking chamois. Like, I was like, I could still see the Bay car park.
Shit, that's mad.
Yeah, I'm really lucky, eh? Everyone's like, oh, you get heaps of animals. And I'm like, yeah, but they're just lucky for where I live. I'm surrounded by them.
Yeah. There's something cool about that part of the country where there's so many
animals.
So many species right there. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I uploaded a video onto YouTube the other day of a pig hunt, and I'm walking up to where we were going to camp, and just as I come around the corner, there's like this patch of really nice fresh grass. I was already looked on top of, pre-planned it. And as I walk around the corner, I get to the grass. And then I look up, and a fallow just runs straight out in front of me, like 20 yards away. And it hasn't seen me yet. So I just sit down, and my mate's got his 308, and he's behind me. And he's too busy just looking at these prints on the floor. And I'm like trying to get his attention. Like, fucking shoot it. It was just like a fallow yearling. And we even said on the way up, well, we get a yearling for camping, that'd be good. But yeah, and then
he sees me
and does a yearling and runs off. And then, yeah, saw fallows, reds and pigs. Like, look, I've literally stood there and I'm looking at a red hind. And then I pan across to the camera, 200 metres up from then, two fallows. And then just to the right of that, a load of pigs. And I'm like, it's just everything. It's just all there. It's hard work to find it. A lot, you know, some of the blocks you go into and there's nothing.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, there's big country down there. There's a lot of area. And
yeah, massive.
You can end up just wandering around. But then when you get on, and I suppose it's kind of like that anywhere, like, you can cover some serious ground and there's just no animals there because there's just no animals there. And then you get to a certain spot and there's just fucking animals galore. Or it's a certain time of year where they're just not in that area. Like, I noticed that a lot, like, through the culling, like, the changes of different shit at different times of year. Like, you just won't see any stags at all. And then, like, something will change, and then you're just seeing stags every fucking day. And, like, you know, it's the change of seasons. For whatever reason, they're just in these areas, and then they're in these areas. And, yeah. But,
yeah, I want to. A lot of it's feed. Like, I've learned over time. I'm like, oh, why do I see animals in these areas? And it's always like the lush vegetation and scrub where then it's not getting baked because the sun's obviously really strong, and the faces that are in the sun, it bakes it. Do you know what I mean? So the new growth doesn't grow as much, but the faces that are in the shade for half the day, they seem to grow better, and they're obviously holding their water better. And I always see chamois like green gullies, and all the stags I see are always in these green gullies because the food's there. But a lot of people will be like, oh, yeah, you need to get up the tops to get the big animals up the tops. And I'm like, well, now down here up the tops, there's nothing up the tops because it's just grass, like tussock.
And just
like, they don't eat it.
Nothing.
Yeah, it's just or rocks, yeah. Yeah, you see chamois up and way up high, like, and a lot of sort of traversing the rocks and stuff, but they're always going to or from food. They're obviously not feeding on
rocks. I sort of fell into that trap when I first started hunting tar. I just had in my mind that, like, tar live on the tops of the big peaks. Yeah. So, like, all I ever wanted to do was climb to the top of the biggest fucking hill I could find because that's where tar live. That was just, like, in my head. And then I, like, started thinking about it. And I'm like, bro, there's no food up there. No, like,
No one lives where there's not the ability to eat. Like, sure, yes, they do climb back up into the tops and they climb back down, but like, you don't just like climb to the very top of a hill where there is nothing other than rock and just expect them to be there. Like, they'll, there needs to be a reason. Like, any animal, like any human, even, like, we do things for fucking reasons, and we go places because there's the thing we need there. If the thing we need isn't there, we will not be there. So if there's no food, they're not going to be there. They'll be, they might be on the tops of those big rocks, but they'll be somewhere where it's not far to go to get to the food.
Yeah. And they'll always be, it's always, you know, they're like us. They just want to be comfortable and fed. So like, steep faces, like the first, before I even went up hunting into a public block. So the first goat I shot was on a farm that I had access to from work through trapping, and they just got caught, like they got a heap of goats. So I'd hunted there, but, and there was deer there, but I didn't know anything about deer really, and I was still learning about stalking and whatnot. And my first dock block, I was like looking at it on topo, looking at all the contour lines, and I saw, it was all super steep, and then I see this flat area. So I put a waypoint on it and just said, potential for reds, because it was flat.
Yeah.
In my mind, if I'm an animal, I'm not going to be sleeping on a face, and I'm not going to be eating on a face, because it's hard work standing up on a face all day, sidling. So I was like, they could be in this flat area where there's like water, there's grass, there's cover from the sun. And then lo and behold, that's where I saw my first stag. Seen the biggest ever stag I've seen up there. And it's just like a flat area, and they're there because everything's there. They don't need to leave. But I've got food, I've got water, and I've got a bed.
Picture together. Yeah. Yeah, everything makes sense. I don't want to gloss over it. You mentioned before not being able to get firearms license because of like PTSD and stuff like that, and I think we definitely need to come back and talk about that, because that's something that you've mentioned is like something you really want to discuss, and I think it's a fucking good thing to dive into. So we will roll back to that, but I want to hear your first stag, which you've got a YouTube video about that.
Yeah. Filmed on a shitty old GoPro.
Yeah. So, tell us about that hunt, but tell the listener, I suppose, like where you've got your YouTube channel, NZ Crossbow.
Crossbow NZ, but yeah.
Crossbow NZ, sorry. Yeah. Speak a little bit about that, and then let's just dive into the story of this first stag, because I think it's
started
cool.
When I was traveling, I was like, oh, I'm gonna make travel videos, but obviously everyone's doing it, so it was kind of end up being pointless, and I gave up with it. But I've always been into photography and video making and stuff, so I was like, oh, now I'm hunting. Went to buy a crossbow, looked on YouTube, like New Zealand crossbow hunting, and it was all American stuff. I was like, why is no one, I mean, surely people are hunting with crossbows because you buy them here. I was like, but there's no videos. So I was like, I'm going to start. So the first goat I shot, I videoed that, but I didn't do anything with the video. And then, I was on this hunt. It was middle of winter. I go into the block and I'm like, there's this valley that I wanted to check out in summer. And it's like perfectly flat green grass. And I was looking at it on satellite and I was like, oh, I can't wait for summer. I'm going to go camp up there. But it was winter and I was like, a bit worried about avalanches, but it's not overly steep. And I was like, oh, I'll be fine. So I go up and I see a couple of chamois prints and that. And then I'm going along this face, sort of following these chamois, but they're onto me. And then I'm about to turn around and go back because I'm up at about 1,000 meters elevation. And I started at about 350. And I've got my gaiters in that arm, but I've got my hunter's elbow boots. My feet are wet. And then I'm just like, I'll have a glass from this little ledge. So I just glass into the valley, and there's a little sort of slip that comes down, and I just see antlers over the top. And I was like, oh, fuck, stags. I'm like, looking at these two stags, and then one of them looks up and he was a 10, and I was like, oh my God, fucking. So that, and then I start sort of, that's basically where I, when I start filming, I'm like, oh, there's these some stags a few hundred meters away. I'm going to try and stalk in. And the snow was really crunchy, but I gained like another 50 meters elevation, and then it became really soft snow where overnight it had only snowed at sort of that height. And that soft snow was just quiet. I was walking on it and it was like walking on a cloud.
It's like deadly quiet, eh, when you get it like that?
Yeah, it's just like walking along through the... And I was literally just following like stag print, just following all of this stuff. And then I kind of lost sight of them and I stood against this rock with my back to it. And then I just see the stags like walking off looking at me. So that they weren't spooked, but they were unsure. They'd obviously seen me moving. So they looked back at me and they walked off, and there's these three big boulders, and they walked off between these boulders. And then one of them, like this spiker, just stood and was just, he was like almost like a lookout. He just stood outside the boulder. The rest were in between the boulders, and he was just looking at me for ages. And I was like, and then I saw a chamois back, and he was about 100 meters away. So I was like, oh, I'll go for the chamois because the stags have already seen me. So I'm trying to get in on the chamois, and then he spooks. And I was like, right, well, now I'm up here. So I climbed up. I was probably about 1300 meters up now. And then the chamois boosted off up the hill. And I'm like, oh, I'll go and see where that spiker was last standing. Because I thought, oh, the stag's probably gone. But I was like, but maybe they've just bedded down in between these boulders. So I started sidling across. But, and I'm not being quiet. I'm just walking across thinking they've probably gone. And as I'm walking across, the spiker's asleep in front of this boulder. And I don't see him until I'm like 30 meters away. And he just stands up, makes me jump. And I'm like, fuck. And the crossbow's loaded. But I was just like, wasn't quick enough. And I was like, shit. And he runs. He runs downhill around the front of the boulder. So I like creep up and I look over the boulder, and there's this 9-point stag stood there, and it looks at him as he runs past and then looks back up towards me as if to be like, what's he running from?
Yeah.
And then he's just still standing looking over thinking like, I don't know, he's probably just thinking like the young lad's being silly. And I'm looking at the stag just like, he's just fucking staring at me. So I like duck back down again, and then I like range it. It's like 45 meters, and I duck back down again, and I'm like, oh my God, I start filming the GoPro and I'm shaking like mad, eh? It's like trembling. And then I go, I'm like, line up his sort of, he's quartered off, and I line up his shoulder, and then I start pulling the trigger. But I just kind of, as I'm pulling the trigger, it surprised me. I think just the adrenaline stuff. Like, it was almost like I let the shot off earlier than I actually expected I would. So as I shot, I was just like, oh my God, like made me jump. And I was just like, fuck.
Yeah.
And then, but then I saw it go in, like through the scope. I saw it go in, and I was like, on the video, I just go, I think that was lungs. I think I hit lungs. And then I'm watching it, and it runs, I don't know, 30 meters, stops, and then wobbles left and right, and then just crashes down the mountain. And I was just fucking, had the biggest hard on ever.
Fuck, that's nuts. Awesome, eh? And were I was just like, buzzing? Like, what were you feeling in that moment?
Like, I didn't believe it had happened. Do you know what I mean? It was like,
yeah,
I bought a crossbow for $550. Someone sent me some swacker broadheads, like my mate Rodney from Chicago, just to help me out. And then I've been watching all these videos of stag hunting, thinking, oh, it's going to take me years to get my first stag. And then I just stumbled across some, and then somehow it's all worked well. But even when it was falling down the hill, I was like, And the speed it died, it was like, if you watch the video, if you count, it's something like 23 seconds from shot to death.
All go away.
I just couldn't believe I'd done it, eh? So all I kept saying was, fuck yes. I was just stood there going, fuck yes, fuck yes, fuck. I just couldn't. And then I was like, yeah, I walk over to where I shot him, and I was like, there was no blood there. Then I walk a few minutes further, and the blood trail starts, and I'm like following the blood trail. And I go down. And I didn't actually know it was a 9. So when I was looking at it, I just see this stag of points. And I'm thinking it's a 6 or something. And I go down and I'm like, oh, it's an 8. And then there's a 9th point. And I didn't class it as a point. But then everyone was on YouTube is like, a point's a point. It's a 9. I was like, I'll take that.
Was it? Go down.
Huh?
Oh, sorry. Like, how was it, like, old? Like, how old was it or anything? Like, was it a
4 years old, people reckon. That's the main age. I didn't know anything at the time, that age.
Right, and it doesn't, like, shit, when it's your first animal, like, when it's your first stag like that.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah. Like, if that was a spiker, I would have had the same feeling.
Yeah, exactly.
I would have had the exact same emotion. But getting down to it, and then I grab his antlers, and I'm like, oh, it's a fucking nice eight. And I'm just stood there holding it, like, this is mental. And it was massive. Like, if you look at the picture, its head is like, almost as like, you know, 3/4 the size of my torso. So even though he's young, he was just like a big animal. Like, he was just chunky. I was holding his antlers and I was just like, this is mental. I just couldn't believe it. I was just holding it and I was like stroking his antlers and I was like poking his nose because I was like, oh, it's kind of like a dog's nose. This is weird. it's just my first. Yeah, I was just like, this is fucking nuts. This is so cool.
Overwhelming, like, I remember my first deer, and like, it's like that overwhelming feeling like that, but like, even since then, in every time I've like been out with somebody else and like helped them shoot their first deer or whatever it is, and it's a very emotional time that you've put in all of this work physically and mentally, and you were training because you're a fat prick before, and now you've like got yourself fit and healthy enough to climb the hill, and then you've like done a bit of practice behind a rifle or whatever and like figured it out, and then all of a sudden it like all comes together and it's like fucking cool.
Yeah, I mean there's obviously luck involved, I think, at times, but the whole buying my first pair of camo pants and stuff like I went on a hunting course. I forgot to mention that part. I went on a hunting course, the Manitohuna Trust. They're like a charitable trust in Queenstown, and they have a guy, a hunter, that works for them, and he goes out harvesting meat and then they give it to food banks. And then so then they come up with this idea, I will start, you know, we could teach people to hunt their own meat. So it was called an intro to hunting course with a bloke called Dan McCarty, and He made a workbook and everything, wrote up this book and had every animal species and how they act and where they feed and the seasons and the rutting and all of that. And then we went to class. So we're in the classroom. I think there was just 3 of us on the first one. They were going to charge money for it, but the first one, they just wanted to know, you know, if we do it for free, see how many people are interested.
Yeah.
They're in the classroom learning about stuff. And I knew half of it already, just from literally from just sitting there watching every fucking hunting video I could find on YouTube I was watching at the time.
Yeah.
And then we went up the shooting range later that day in the afternoon. This guy called, I think his name is Dan as well, but Jay Wilds uses his range anyway. It's up near Queenstown.
I know the guy you're talking about.
He's an ex New Zealand Army. I think he was an armourer. He's an armourer. I don't think he hunts much. I think he just likes guns. I went up there and they knew I'd been in the army and shot some rifles. Never a bolt action, but if we get on the range and they're like, right, who wants to go first? And I was like, yeah, I'll go first. And the other two were like, yeah, you can go first. He's done it before. And then, so I think it was 100 metres, first round, like dead centre, bullseye. I was like, sweet. Next round, way off. I put 5 rounds down. First one was great. All the four, the next four were just all over the show. And for the first round, the instructor, Danny, just goes, oh, yeah, you are quite good, aren't you? And I was like, I was actually pretty good at shooting when I was in the army. I was on the regiment shooting team and stuff. And then, so first round, I was like, yeah, still got it. And then I was like, oh, no, I haven't. It was just a fluke. Then I go to give the rifle to the girl who's about to come up and shoot. And the scope rattles. And I was like, and I grabbed it and I turned around to Dan and I was like, I think that's maybe why my 5 rounds after the first one were astray. And he's like, fuck, that's embarrassing, eh?
That's embarrassing for her, mate.
Yeah, he was like, oh, just don't use it. It sits in the truck. It's probably just vibrated over in the back of the truck, you know, 223. And I was like, oh, yeah. So then I had another go and then most of my rounds are good. I think bar one was astray. Yeah, and then the next morning we went out for a hunt and we drove up Old Warman Range near Cromwell and saw a heap of goats, and we did a rock, paper, scissors. This guy shot the first goat, shot this billy quite close, and then I had this nanny, and I'm like, he goes, oh yeah, here's a backpack, rest on the backpack. And then he goes, oh yeah, here's a bag for the stock. I can't do that, eh? You know, when you put the bag under the stock.
At the back.
At the back. Like, I just can't. Even when I was on the range, I was like, it just feels weird. But
yeah, okay.
Yeah, in the army, you just shoot from prone and you hold it with your arms. You don't have a bipod or anything.
Yeah.
So I was just like, no, I can't. It's just annoying me. So I'm just on a backpack, lining up to go. And then I was like, oh, how high do I aim? I was like, what, we zeroed out? I just didn't know. Hey, I didn't know anything. And he was like, oh, just aim 2 inches high. So I aimed 2 inches high and I just dropped the scope. And I didn't know how.
Yeah.
He had a good scope on it. So I didn't know how. Quite a mag, like, I think it was like high magnification on the scope. So I thought this goat was heaps closer. And he goes, oh, no, it's 220 meters. And I was like, fuck, it's like the longest shot I've probably ever taken. Other than like, fired a machine gun at 600 meters into the ocean once, but that's different. So yeah, shot this goat and I was like, oh, yeah. And then he butchered it for me, showed me how to butcher, you know, take back legs and back straps, and then I took it home and ate it, and that was my first kill, which was exciting, but for me, it's just like, it's a goat. There was heaps of them around, so we literally drove up there, and there's goats everywhere. But it's still like, cool, I've harvested that.
Yeah, and that's a cool experience. I had someone asking me a while ago, I was doing I was up in Russell Forest shooting some goats, and we'd gone down to the marae for the day just to, like, they had, like, the regional council had, like, a day there, and they were just, like, doing, like, community engagement and stuff. So they had just, like, a heap of locals coming around and just asking us colours, like, what was going on, and the council were telling them, like, what the big plan is and stuff. And there's a guy there, like, wanting to get into hunting but had no idea about, like, how to do it and whatnot. And I was saying to him this, like, about the NZDA hunts courses. Like, I don't really know much about them, but I know that, like, a lot of the NZDAs offer those hunts courses. I think Stu was saying we've just now got one set up for in Taranaki, which is cool. But, like, did you find, like, that kind of that course, like, that sort of a thing, like, real, like, beneficial, like, bridge that gap?
Oh, yeah, massively. And,
like, showing you those things that,
yeah,
because, like, most people don't know how to
animals, like, the knowledge of just, you know, where you find the animals feeding and the seasons, and it was just stuff you know, having it in front of you in a book. Like, even now, sometimes I'll get the book out and just have a flick through it and just have a read, refresh my memory. Because there's so many animals, you can end up getting focused on one, right? And then you forget what the others, what the others do in their seasons. And yeah, no, it's a massive help having these courses. And then there's that betterhunting.nz. Or is it betterhunter.nz?
I don't even know what this is. I'm going to have to look at that.
Where is it? Better. But it's a free, betterhunting.nz. And it's a free online hunting course. And it's like 28 modules or something. It's huge.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been doing that because I was like, I'm going to learn things. So it's got everything, you know, map and compass and navigation and weather and safety. It's got all the, everyone's focused on purely the hunting, right, and the shooting, and but a lot of it is all of that stuff.
There's so much more to it. People get wound up, and, like, shit, I'm guilty of it sometimes. Like, I love gear and just get, like, excited on new gear. It was like, I mean, you look at Stu, he's a fucking shocker for new gear. I swear.
I can't keep up with him.
He's got something new he's just bought. He's got something that he only had for a week. He's selling on the
ground. Then he's like, selling this.
Shout out
selling
to Stu,
this,
you're a bit of a whore.
Yeah, massive kit whore.
He's a mad gear whore. But, like, gear's awesome and it's fun. But people can get way too caught up on, like, what gear they have instead of the skill. And the skill is the important part that you need to, like,
and, like, people take long, long shots. There's a guy on YouTube, I'm not going to say his name, but he just takes the longest shots on animals, right? And half of them he just messes up, and it's like, He's like, oh, but I learned from it. And I'm like, but if you just half that distance by walking, which is what easily achievable, then
yeah,
it's a heap better. I don't know. It's just like a bravado thing. Like, look, I took a really long shot. It's like, yeah, but he also blew its arse open.
There's something, like, don't get me wrong, like the long range shooting stuff, like, that's cool.
That's cool.
And like, I've shot shit from a long way away, and I've shot animals and targets from a long way away, and it's fucking fun. And there's still a lot of skill involved, but it's way more exciting getting like 20 yards from something.
Yeah.
And the,
but it would just mean, even with, you know, if somebody was shooting a 500 and they could easily just drop that to 300, and then just think you're less chance of messing it up.
I think it's all so I spent I've got that old 303, so single shot 303, like open sight, you know, and I spent a year where that was the only thing I hunted with. And like, I shot so much shit really fucking close. It was awesome. There was some awesome stalks that I put on that if I had, like, if I had been doing that with my 270 WISM, like, I just would have shot it from 100, 200, 300, 400, whatever. Where
probably not as much fun.
Yeah. And like, there's still skill involved, and there's still like a reasonable amount of a stalk put in and all of that. But man, I remember like shit in the Edison River. I put in a stalk on a bull and a bunch of nannies in the rut, like, going through this massive boulder field through like thick fog, and there's snow all over the ground, and I'm like hopping from boulder to boulder trying to get close, and ended up missing. I think I misjudged the distance in the thing, and I don't know, I cocked up the shot anyway, but like, I had so much fucking fun snorkeling right in, whereas if I'd had a scope rifle, I would have just like sat back, waited for a little bit of a clear patch, because like the fog was kind of rolling in and out. You know how you kind of get those little clear patches where you can see?
Yeah.
I would have just been able to zoom in on the bastard and shot him. And like, that 270 WISM in mine's a fucking tack driver, but there's so much more fun to it when you get right in close with this, like, especially with the 303, because it's just this crude old thing, you know?
I bet. Yeah, it's,
I
wanted a rifle, obviously, because everyone else has one, right? I'm like, yeah, guns are cool, and I can shoot. But now, I don't think I would want to get one. I don't think I'd want one now, because I've...
So you're, like, now that you've successful. Kind of got forced into the crossbow, and now, like...
And people still think really it's weird. Enjoy They're it. Like, why a crossbow? Like you said today, you were like,
"Oh, it's definitely weird as fuck." Like,
people are like, "What? Like, you fucking inbred? Are you a redneck? Like, why are you using a crossbow?" I heard someone say, my mate who I work with, he was in Twizel or somewhere, and he hunts in the UK with a rifle. But he couldn't get a firearms license here that easily, so he was going to get one. Yeah. But he was just like, "Ah, I might buy a crossbow." And this guy in this hunting shop at Twizel, wherever he was, Tekapo or whatever, he was like, nah, you don't want a crossbow. Poachers use crossbows. You won't, you know, crossbows are pointless, blah, blah, blah. You want to get a compound bow. Anyway, so he buys a compound bow, but it just, you know, it's harder than a crossbow. The stalking's the same.
Because
you can't lay down. You can't sit down.
Yeah.
You can, but it's all stood up, and like, there's more skill involved, more practice involved. So he bought a compound, and then he was like, I bought a crossbow, and then he was like, oh, I wish I bought a crossbow. We shouldn't listen to that guy. And I've heard other people being like, yeah, poachers use crossbows because they're quiet. And I was just like, but I kind of just wanted to get a crossbow and then change the perception of crossbows.
Yeah, which I think is, that's a good, goal or vision or whatever you want to call it to have. Like, and I think you're in part doing that with, like, your YouTube and your shit on the gram. Like, it's...
I get heaps of messages.
You know, you should make people. You should get hats. Make crossbows great again.
Yeah. in bright red.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nah.
Because so, like, run us through your crossbow setup, like, because I mean, I don't know.
Well, I've got my second one, so I was on my first crossbow. My first crossbow was cheap, nasty EK blade, and that has just had like the stock scope, which is like a 4x32 scope, and it was horrendously small. It was just, yeah. And I shot that. I shot my first stag with that. I shot a chamois back, my first chamois back with it. That was like not massive, only 8.5 inch, but still a back. Shot my first fallow with it. I think that's about it. And loads of goats. And that, I think that was 175 pounds draw weight. And it was like 340 feet per second. But I shot a stag at 78 metres with that. It was quite good. And then I upgraded, and now I've got a... Like, it's surprising to know how far an accurate... Like, my current one is more accurate. I can hit 80 metres and I can hit, I don't know, grapefruit size at 80 metres. Like, I'm not hitting a bullseye. But I always shoot from kneeling. Always shoot from kneeling. Like, when I'm practising on a target, I always shoot from kneeling because in my mind, I'm like... I could shoot from prone, right, and side in at prone, but then I'm not really learning anything because I'm rarely shooting in prone when I'm hunting because I'm through scrub and behind rocks. And I don't shoot from standing because I'm lanky and the wind will blow me around and the crossbow's, you know, heavy and I've got noodle arms. So I don't So I don't shoot from standing. So I shoot with my right knee on the ground and my left elbow on my left knee, and then my right, just like that, basically. Left over on left knee resting, and then that's how I shoot. Or if I'm on a steep face, I'll sit down on my ass and I put my elbows inside my knees and I shoot that way.
Yep,
I never shoot from prone. So, 80 meters is my max.
So, how does really it shoot like? So, it's 100, what did you say, 175 pounds?
That one was my new one's 200 pounds.
200 pounds, so that's. But to put that in perspective, most guys running compound bows will be running somewhere between like 60 and 80 pounds. If you're a fucking freak like Cam Haynes or Joe Rogan, you'd be running like a 90-pound bow. You're jacked up on all the good juice. But like most people will be running like a 60, 65, 70-pound bow, would be fair to say. So you're like more than twice the boogie of that.
Yeah.
How... Like, what are the, you know, so they don't call them arrows, it's a bolt. And it's what bolt, is, like, how much does a bolt weigh? And, like, what sort of heads are you using with it and shit?
Mine are quite heavy. I'm actually going to drop some weight off them because I've lost speed. And I've seen, like, at 50 meters, I've seen a chamois on a video on my videos, like, jump the string. You know, here's it. Just while the bolt gets it, jumps. I still got it good.
Yeah.
I was just like, I need a little bit more speed. So at the moment, I've got my bolt, total weight of bolt and broadhead is like 517 grains, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, 517. And the stock bolts, it came with total weight 400. So I've lost like 100 for about 100 feet per second.
Yeah, okay.
But I get solid penetration. Like, I shot a pig with it close range. And it went through its left leg, shattered its left shoulder, just completely shattered it. Went through, clipped the heart, cut across like the middle of its chest, and then it shattered its right leg, and then piled into the ground. And it just like it just completely
that's good.
It just yeah, just both just completely shattered both bones, and then the broadhead was intact, so it wasn't bent or anything. Like the penetration of the heavy bolt. So what sort of?
Like that's mad penetration.
But
I suppose you get that because of the high poundage, the speed's going to be way higher than what's coming out of like a compound bow. Even with a lighter weight, even if you were to back it down to a light weight, you're still getting so much force.
Oh, yeah, kill easily.
Because what is it? Mass forces, mass times velocity. Been a while since I've done a physics class, so like you got to find that balance point between your weight of your arrow and the speed that you can get. But you're going to end up with the you want a high force number when you get to the end there anyway.
Yeah.
Do you, like when I was shooting my longbow a lot, like having, was it like front, like your weight front to center was like quite a important thing to worry about? Like how, never paid attention? Okay, well, we won't talk
about that. A lot of guys will be like paying attention to each grain. Like I didn't pay any attention to weight until recently when I was like, I'm dropping, you know, my bolts are dropping real quick. Sort of past 60, and then I was just kind of thinking, they jumped the string. And so my mate shot a pig the other day with his crossbow, and I took him up pig hunting, and he shot it at 72 yards. And it was like perfect shot. And I was he zeroed at 20, so I had to zero mine at 40 because I rarely shoot below 40 yards, 40 meters.
Yeah,
40, and then I can shoot up to 80. But annoyingly, because I'm 0-40, if I'm below 40, I can't use the 20 meter line on the scope because then it hits too high.
So you got to really know your scope there, eh? Yeah.
Yeah, so I need to.
That's.
So I want to decrease the weight of the bolt and get more FPS, and then I should be able to 0-20 and then be good out to 80. Or even 100.
Oh, because you'll shoot flatter. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the idea. And then what sort of broadheads are you running? Like fixed blades? You're running mechanicals? Three blade things? Or are they?
So, AliExpress. So, Swackers, US company Swackers. My mate Rodney sent me these Swackers, and three of them were legit, and the three of them were AliExpress or something. I tried them straight away, and they fly like fill points. Like they fly fine. Like you can't use fixed blades of a crossbow because there's too much windage involved, and they plane. Like if you fire a fixed blade, they just skirt all over the place. They plane too much.
Do they have veins on them? Yeah, so they're veined and
they're different though. They're like usually 4 inch of the bigger veins than you'll get on an arrow.
Oh, so more similar to like the veins that somebody would have on a traditional bow, like on a recurve or a long bow.
Yeah, I suppose it's more for stability because of the high speed.
Yeah.
So okay, and so the mechanicals work really well. So I'm just using these AliExpress. It cost me like. Works out to be like $2 each instead of like $20 each. So I've just been using them.
Yeah.
And then my mate shot this pig the other day with a free blade broadhead, a Grim Reaper, and the amount of blood that came out of it, like it was insane. And I was like, I've lost a few animals from, got good blood trails, but maybe not enough. It's, I don't know. The ones I use are pretty, when they open, they're pretty wide, but I think a three blade is better. So I found they're like $100 for four or something. And I'm like, I can't justify that because every time I lose a bolt, I'm just going to get annoyed. And living in Queenstown, you don't have much money because it's expensive. So
yeah,
I found some AliExpress versions of these broadheads. And I was like, sweet. Yeah. They only come in 125 grain. So I was like, well, I'm going to have to drop weight off my bolt. So I'm going to have to get a different bolt to get these Grim Reaper rip-offs. But I love AliExpress, eh? Crossbow hunters have a thing. Where they want they think they have to have the most expensive kit. I know guys with 4.5 grand crossbows. Jesus. And they don't shoot much pups. They just shoot rabbits or targets. And I'm like, that is insane. I don't get it.
I haven't even got a 4.5 grand rifle.
Yeah, see, I just like, crossbows are so expensive. For some of them, mine was $870, my most recent one. And I've easily harvested enough meat to pay for it. Easily. Justifies it. And even if if you don't get meat, it's just I take it for a walk. Even if I get anything, it's like if I didn't have the crossbow, I wouldn't be out hunting and then I'd be sitting at home doing nothing, I guess.
Exactly. That's half of it. Half of the whole going hunting and going outdoors, like for me, it is my mental reset. It's fucking phenomenal for my mental health. And I was actually talking to a mate about it the other day, Shout out to the doctor, he'll be listening, about not having, he's a religious man, I'm not a religious man, but there's something in the going hunting that gives me that connection to a bigger thing than just myself, and allows me to like reflect on who I am and what I'm doing in my life, and like give you that mental reset and all of that. And so it's like, while I don't go to church, I go to the bush, and
the bush is your church.
The bush is the church, and that reminds me of that quote from Brad Turner, the Kiwi Outdoors dad. How's it go? The episode I did with him, I opened with it because it's phenomenal. It's something like, I am not a religious man, I am a spiritual person, and connecting with the mountains. Sorry, Brad, I've just fucked up your yarn there, but it's a phenomenal quote. Check him out on the gram. I'm pretty sure it's his pinned post, like at the top.
Oh, yeah.
But true, though, I think that's a good segue into like talking about like mental health and how we can.
Yeah, for deal. Sure. So I was.
Yeah, like I
used to do heaps of tramping. I used to do heaps of tramping before I was hunting. And now I wouldn't even think about tramping without hunting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Tramping was my escape, but I didn't do it anywhere near as often because it wasn't as enjoyable. But the hunting, I think it's just, I've always had a passion, right? So like, fishing was a passion as a kid, and then motorbikes was a passion. And then I moved over here and didn't have a motorbike because I was a backpacker. So then passion, didn't really have a passion when I was here. It just become like drinking and the Queenstown party culture, and then hunting.
Yeah.
Hunting just changed everything, eh? And it just gave me so much. I was like, I'd go hunting 2 or 3 days a week during in the winter that I started. I was just hunting constantly, watching videos and hunting. It was just like everything I do was hunting, and then I didn't drink, and yeah, it was bloody great. It was just a massive, I like nature. Nature is definitely where we're meant to be. Like, it's where we, you know, we're animals. It's where we came from. I lived in Sydney for a bit, and I found Sydney the most depressing place ever. It's just all concrete, and no one talks to each other. It was just like, you're just like a robot. I just don't think. Yeah. And then as soon as I got to Queenstown, I just knew it's where I was meant to be. I got here and I was like,
yeah.
Mountains, like, I'm not a beach person at all, so I just got here, I was like, mountains, lakes, fishing, and then obviously become hunting, and I was like, this is where I'm meant to be. Like, I'm happier here than I've been anywhere else.
Fuck, that's still cool. Completely to happy. That place.
You still get your own struggles and stuff, but definitely so good just having an environment around you that you enjoy. And that you can look at and be like,
cool. We will always have our own struggles, and we'll always have those things, but having, like, knowing that hunting or the outdoors or whatever it is, shit, could be building Legos or whatever for some people, but like knowing what that thing is that you can use as a tool to like help reset yourself and like just have that thing. Like, maybe this was last year, I went on this hunt, and I'll often, like, I love like hunting with other people, love having a yarn, as most people know, but I also really enjoy just like going on hunts by myself. And I had this good hunt last year. I just like walked off into a place that I know really well and took a book, and I don't even know if I like looked through my binos for like a grand total of half an hour for the whole weekend. I just read my book and enjoyed time by myself and just wandered around looking at birds and like seen some animals, but like wasn't that concerned on like actually doing anything. It's just a good like reset for yourself. I think that's fucking important. It's like, shit, we did.
And it gets you away from, I think social media has ruined fucking half the world. But I like going hunting because I'm not on my phone.
Like, yeah.
You know what I mean? And you can't, it's not like the temptation's there. You can't go on your phone. Well, you can. There's nothing to look at because you haven't got reception.
Mm.
So it's just an escape. It's an escape. No one could bother you. You're not sitting on Instagram doom scrolling, watching dog videos. You just, yeah. I've got a bad habit of reading the news, which I'm trying to stop. Because if you read the news, it's just never good news. It's always.
I gave up on the news. I deleted all news apps off my phone. I don't do the news at all. And honestly, I've never been happier in my fucking life.
It's just depressing. Every time I'm reading it, like, I'll be bored and I'll be like, oh, I see what's going on in the news in the world, in the UK and stuff. And I read it, I'm like, oh, someone else has stabbed someone else. Oh, someone's dropped bombs on someone else. Cool. Okay. Nice. Now I'm sad.
They never talk about the good things, eh?
No, it's never like, oh, this happened. It's just fucking miserable shite.
Yeah.
I think there is one news I found, which is called Good News. And it's just all good news, which is nice.
Oh, shit. Oh, that'd be worth looking at then.
Yeah. Not sure what the good news is. Yeah. A golden retriever had some puppies today. That's all.
So what are some things that you struggle with, and how do you manage that yourself, and how does the outdoors fit into being that sort of tool?
My partner, my ex-partner, she could literally tell, like, if I needed to go hunting. So if I didn't go, I would try and go hunting once a week. And if I didn't, I can see, she could see, like, just get pissed off. I just get, like, my fuse gets shorter. I start getting miserable. My anxiety starts coming back because I'm like, I need that exercise. And if I just need that, like, because when I go hunting, I push myself to my limit. Every time I just boost up a mountain, I'll be absolutely fucked. I need that. I need that bit of pain and endorphins and all that from exercise. My main struggle is probably sleeping. Sleeping because of PTSD. So then, like, nightmares. And then because you get a shit sleep, you wake up in a bad mood and then you wake up with anxiety. Anxiety is a big one for me. I think when you're anxious, right? You're like, oh, I'm a bit anxious or I'm stressed, I'll have a beer. And it'll help. But then after, it makes you worse. And hunting kept me away from drinking. I used to drink heaps. I've been drinking 2 or 3 days a week in Queenstown. And now it's probably not even once a week. Sometimes not even once a month. So, yeah, hunting got me away from all that. Kept my brain busy. And then you meet like-minded people. Like, I've met so many other guys you've got something in common.
Yeah.
Before that, I was in Queensland.
And it gives you something.
Everyone mountain bikes or skis, and I don't mountain bike, I don't ski. So it's kind of like, I had friends in Queenstown, but we didn't have anything in common other than drinking.
The common ground becomes drinking, eh? And then that's not drinking's not a good common ground to have.
No,
because it doesn't
good really become. It's
not
fun.
Constructive.
It's fun, and you can have a good laugh, but it's not. You never wake up next morning and go, I feel so good. If I go hunting, I wake up and I'm like, I feel so good.
Yeah,
but I've never woke up from not drinking. 90% of the time, I wake up and I go, well, that wasn't worth it, was it? Well, that wasn't worth it. Like yesterday when I was supposed to do a podcast with you, but I didn't because I was hungover. There's always drama. There's always drama. It just brings out the worst in people. Okay. Brings out my emotions and I get worse and makes my nightmares worse and all that. I was on medication for anxiety and stuff, but it turns out that medication made me worse because when I stopped it, I got heaps better and now I sleep heaps better. And the best medication I found is going outdoors.
Going out, yeah. Because I've found that shit. I've had periods in my life where, like,
I've been fucking miserable, and like, there's been no doctor that said like, oh, you've got depression, but like, my fucking God, you feel depressed.
Yeah.
And there's the best thing that I found, and this is kind of like, it's a weird, I still haven't figured out a way to really like say this in like a nice tidy way, but like, I was referring it, I was talking with a mate and we're on a farm, and like the paddock, like she's got sheep on this farm, and the paddocks that she's got, like the grass is growing like really well in these paddocks. It's real nice pasture for these animals, but the gateways were a fucking mess, and we're struggling to get these sheep to go through the gateway because it's just this big fucking bog, and like all these lambs just didn't want to go through. And I was thinking about how that's like kind of like a good metaphor or analogy or whatever you want to call it for like things in your life, and that you can have great pastures, but if your laneways or your gateways or like your roads are shit, it doesn't matter how good that paddock is. If you can't get to that paddock, it's no fucking use to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, for and sure. If you've got really good roads, really good infrastructure in your life, but there's nowhere to actually go. Like if your paddock is shit, but if your gateways are great, but you get in there and there's no grass, then what's the fucking point? You'll still be miserable. And so you need to have that balance where you need to have everything together, and like to have your mental state really good, you need to be physically fit and healthy.
Yeah. There's,
and
I was heaps worse when I was sitting on my ass in the UK. Certainly, I had PTSD and all that. I didn't do anything. I was like, I'd ride my motorbike or I'd drink. And the longer you sit indoors, and when you've got depression, all you want to do is sit indoors. You don't want to go to work. You don't want to socialize.
You don't want to do anything.
But then it doesn't get better, right? Because you're not doing anything.
No.
And you need to go. Drinking doesn't help.
Yeah, fuck, it doesn't. Because you just
wake up the next day and you don't do anything.
yeah. And then you're back in that cycle. Yeah. And it's, you need to also like get your, like a big part is like identifying what it is that is the issue and then doing something. There's a quote from talking to an old geezer a few years back, and I was asking him about dogs, and he said to me, whatever you do, if you get a dog and it's a shit dog, you need to just shoot it and get another dog and start again, because there's too many shit dogs putting good dogs out of jobs. And like, initially that just like resonated with me with like, you know, getting the dog, and if you've got a shit dog, just fucking get rid of it and like cut your losses and go again. But then I started thinking about it, like I quit my job one day purely, well, not like, but like that was the triggering thing. I was thinking to myself, like, if you've got something and it's so shit, you just need to fucking get rid of it so you can move on and find the next thing and get working.
Yeah.
And I just went up to my boss and I'm fucking done. I'm out of here.
And a lot of people don't do that, eh? I've walked out of so many jobs because I'm like, I wake up and be like, I hate my job. So I'm like, so why am I doing it? Why am I doing it? Like, my job at the moment, and I mean, I like it. That's why I do it. I'm not going
to... You do have to be careful. Like, you can't just quit your fucking job if, like, you've got no money.
I'm not be like, right, just go be homeless. Go live in the bush. It's fine.
Go live in the bush. It actually turns out you can just go live in a Kmart tent in the bush and everything will be okay.
Yeah, you'll be sweet. But no, yeah. But it's like if something, if that thing's not making you happy, get rid of it. But mine is my recent relationship. all of my mates are like, Ben, you were fine. But for the year before I met her, I hadn't self-harmed or cried or had a crisis. After I met her, I've been to hospital like 4 times. I've had like 18 stitches. I mean, just, and all my mates are like, Ben, this is clearly the issue you're, this is clearly the trigger. Like everyone can see it. They're like, you know, you're not being treated well at all, but you're too scared to leave her. So then you just get stuck.
Isn't it very hard when someone can be telling you something and from the outside, it's clear as fucking day that what they're telling you is the right thing.
Yeah.
But often you won't listen.
No, you're in denial. And same as drinking. People will say to me, my dad always says to me,
and
he'll be like, I'll send him a happy message, like, oh, I'm having a fucking shit time. And he'll be like, you drunk? I'm like, yeah. He's like, stop drinking. It's your problem. Like, you're kind of in denial. You're like, it's not the drinking. And for me, it's like, nah, it's not the relationship. It's just life. It's past trauma. And I'm like, nah. They're like, nah, the relationship's bringing
up. And you're past trauma. There is some truth to it. Like, it isn't, like, that relationship you were in was not the overarching problem, but no, it is something that is triggering it, and it's like irritating. It's
adding to, you know, it's adding to stress.
Yeah, and it's stopping you from. Got. Yeah.
And then I stop,
and sometimes you need to just shoot the dog and then find out what the fucking problems are and work through them.
Well, luckily she's just moving away, so I won't be shooting any dogs. she's moving back up north, so that's down. That's, you know, but that makes it a lot easier because then it's like, oh, okay, well, I'm not leaving Queenstown. I'm not going to follow, and over time, it does take me a while to realise, over time, but I have realised like that this relationship is terrible. You're heaps younger than me. Go shake your ass at festivals. I'm going to go shoot bolts of deer.